You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the Midside, where we reference short-lived professional wrestling stables from 1999. I'm your host, Justin Emlesneski, and if you want to know what stable I'm talking about, you should join us in our new Discord channel, because I will be giving the answer in there and only in there. That means nobody asked the question right now to know what the fuck I'm talking about. Also joining me this trip, from our nation's capital and new homeowner, Daniel T. Richards.
That's right. I bought a home, I moved out to the suburbs, and I'm having a child. So, you know, such living the life. Our new home. We moved officially. So last night, as we record this, was our first night in a brand new home with a brand new set of responsibilities. And boy, is it going to be fun, especially when that pool opens up on Tuesday. Oh boy. I can't wait.
So wait, are you going to have to take care of the pool, like keep it clean and keep the chlorine in there and everything?
We'll have a pool service come once a month, but in the interim, yeah, I'll have to check pH levels and net things out. We had a pool when I was growing up, so I'm not totally unfamiliar, although I may still be totally incompetent.
So a pool boy once a month, so you only have to worry about your wife once a month.
That's right. Yes, I only have to worry about my wife getting in a lawsuit situation once a month where she hurts someone, yes, who comes to our home.
I really want to see The Real Housewives of DC starring your wife now. I want to see that.
We have to have lawn care people come at least once, too, because it's huge property. I don't know why I did this. I grew up on huge property, and I hated it. Now I bought huge property. And so we have to have some people, i.e. Mexicans. I can say that because I am Mexican. Come clean up the yard. And they saw it today and their eyes bulged out of their heads. They're like, yeah, we're gonna have to get back to you on that quote that we said. That's just not true anymore. So money, responsibilities,
I think,
so many things, adulting.
I think you can only hire a crew of half Mexicans. Half of your workers have to be white and half of them have to be Mexican.
It'll never get done. It just won't get done. There are just some jobs, Justin, that the one half of me can't do.
Also joining us on this trip, from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
How's it going, guys? It's been an interesting week. We've had someone imprisoned in England for political activism. And because of a gag order, no one can talk about it. So feeling a little down about that. And then I heard The Expanse was officially picked up by Jeff Bezos at Amazon. So it's all turned around. We have hope. Through art, we can make a change.
Is it really political activism that he's in jail for? I thought it was just reporting a news story.
It is, but it's sort of a long-term like intimidation, because he's been quite outspoken against Islamism, and so they've sort of put him as some sort of like Hitler character in the mainstream media, whereas people who actually listen to him are probably, you know, maybe not as far to the right as Hitler. maybe just normal people concerned about the Islamization of the prisons in the UK and the radicalization of folks inside of the UK, but they've slowly ramped up this this intimidation campaign, and they actually arrested him for violating a gag order. But what he was actually saying during those comments were things that were published in news stories. He wasn't saying anything that was happening inside the courtroom. So you have a weird, you know, the way it went down. They basically arrested him and jailed him for 13 months, all within an hour. So people are kind of scratching their heads outside of the UK, but inside the UK, now everyone's afraid of the gag order, so no one's talking about it.
Well, mission accomplished there. Hypothetical question. Yeah. I don't think it was Ayn Rand, but many objectivists say that basically the line you draw at where you would use violence to overthrow your government is free speech. Is Britain there? Would the people of Britain be justified in violently overthrowing their government? Just curious.
It's interesting because they don't have a quite like we have a constitutional, you know, protection for free speech. They don't have free speech per se. They have like free speech zones and tons of restrictions. So it's sort of an edge case, but I mean, it's hard. Like there's a lot of really, you know, I've been seeing the tweets and seeing some of the folks post about it on YouTube, both inside and outside the country. And, you know, it's very strange to have someone like Sargon say, I can't comment on this. I have a family.
Yeah, it's a weird.
And that's disturbing.
These kind of things, and then lots of stuff going around about, like, you know, the guy who flipped off the police camera and was jailed, I think, or heavily fined for doing that. And then, like, police stations around London, or, sorry, England, generally speaking, tweeting out things like, we are actively policing for hate speech. If we see you saying things, we will come after you. On Twitter!
Yeah, and the Nazi pug guy is still in jail. Nazi pug guy is still in jail. So
the Nazi pug guy. That's right. Pug Hitler.
They're too distracted by the royal wedding to overthrow their government.
It's true. Huh. It's true. Just curious if anyone out there thinks that violence would be morally justified in England. Tweet at me.
Yeah,
what your argument is.
Yeah, if any of our UK listeners want to have a discussion on Discord, if they aren't afraid of getting arrested, feel free to join.
What's I was going to say? Are they allowed to listen to our show in England, or are we officially banned in England?
Yeah, we'll be like Lauren Sutherland. We won't be able to enter the UK next time we try because we've talked about this.
Well, speaking of someone really who couldn't enter places.
Oh, that was a good one. I was going to go with the transition. In England, they're worried about overthrowing their government because of free speech requirements. In America, we're worried about people not liking us because we're too fat. Let's find out what we're talking about in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. Isn't just a fad.
A blogger for Glitter Plus Lasers, yes, that's the name of the blog, says she was stopped from taking photos in a bikini at a Las Vegas hotel despite previously getting permission from the staff to do so. Her name is Anna O'Brien. She's 33, and she says that when she started taking these photos, even though she asked the hotel ahead of time she could, security guard, quote, got aggressive, unquote, with her and her photographer over her bikini. Despite women in comparable attire, i.e. showgirls, walking through the same area. So O'Brien claims it's because of her body. She says, quote, it's hard after years of being told plus-size women cannot wear certain things to not have an irrational shame come upon you when someone of authority questions your right to do a normal thing like wear a swimsuit, she says. I am body positive and genuinely love myself, but my past experiences can't be erased or forgotten. The hotel responded that all guests wearing the bathing suits inside the lobby and casino are asked to cover up. Additionally, Ms. O'Brien never shared with the PR team that she intended to take photos in the lobby in her bathing suit. Had we understood her intent, additional clearances to take photos would have been required, and if permitted, we would have had a PR team member present to staff. Justin, is it really because she's fat? Please say yes.
It's completely because she's fat, but also, just a point of order here before I get into the real meat of this story.
Mm-hmm.
Don't they not allow anyone to walk through lobbies in Vegas in their bathing suits? I mean, typically to get from your room to the pool, you have to do that, but you have to be covered up, don't you?
I believe
that's
you
been
have
my
to
experience.
Bring a towel. I don't know. I've only been to Vegas
right.
a few times.
I mean, even a hot girl in Vegas, if she's in her bikini, that's going to cause a disruption in the lobby.
A disruption in your pants.
That was the euphemism. But the thing about this story that really, really, really sticks out to me is she calls it an irrational shame. It is a completely rational shame. Like, this is a perfect example of emotions being rational and having the proper and healthy emotional response. But she's so irrational that she's convinced herself that her rationality is irrational. I mean, this is like a brilliant metaphor, a brilliant microcosm of our society.
In this case, it's
completely legitimate for a private business to say, we don't want you to be in the lobby taking pictures or in your bikini because of your size. You can say that, especially if your whole city is built upon image and built upon sin. Why would you want that? That's legitimate. And now she's trying to say it's illegitimate because of her own irrationality.
Body positivity is an interesting concept. I think there perhaps is some rational place for it, but it has to be about things you have no control over. Women who are, you know, genuinely tall or have bigger builds, or men who have, let's say, some sort of disformity, or who might be, I don't know, how tall are you, Justin? You should be positive.
I was
going
to say that. It doesn't even insult me. I know you're trying to get a rise out of me.
You should be positive about those things, because there's no reason to feel bad about them. But one look at this photo, and this is not the case. This is a woman who needs to put down the ding-dongs and put on a bathrobe and learn a little bit less body positivity and learn a little bit more how to use the treadmill, or at least eat better. She is killing herself. There's nothing to be positive about here. This is not a matter of preference. It's not a matter of I'm bigger than the average woman. It's a matter of you are heinously obese. Heinously obese.
Well, and this is where a lot of the tolerant movement, the tolerance movement, has been taken too far into social justice. The idea of hating people for things they can't control, such as race, such as ethnic background, such as physicality, such as sexual preference. Those are all wrong, because that's outside of someone's control. You can't control that, right? You're born that way. So what you do is that's who you are. You can't control that. But your choices you make, the fact that you shouldn't be shamed for that, that's the problem. We've now reached the point where we just have to accept everything no matter what, even the choices people are making, and we don't draw that line anymore. And this story is a perfect example of that.
William, so last week, or sometime, we had a woman who was quote-unquote shamed off of a Harry Potter ride for being fat. Now we have a woman who's quote-unquote shamed out of a lobby for being fat. How are these businesses going to stay in business and make money if they constantly harass fat people, i.e. 60% of everyone in America?
Well, I think this is a bit of victimhood clickbait. I mean, there is a way, like we already talked about it, if you're walking through the casino or through the lobby of the hotel in Vegas and you're in a bikini, it doesn't matter who you are, what size you are, what shape you are, they're going to ask you to cover up. That pool attire is only appropriate in the pool areas. This is because they're serving a worldwide community of folks with all sorts of different backgrounds in Vegas. Right or wrong, they're catering to their customers when they say that. And there are rules for doing things like photography and things like that. Like, this is all just completely private property with pretty rational rules. But because she had this experience, she immediately points to her size, which is interesting, right? Like, this is her go-to thing for whenever something's going wrong, is it's because of her size. And I mean, it would be one thing if people were yelling "Hey, fatty" at her while she's taking a photo or something, right? Like, there's things we
Justin
can talk about,
there.
Right? Like, you don't know. You don't know.
Dad, you're saying everything I'm going to say this week before I say it.
You don't know what people are going through. I know there's people who struggle with weight issues, and they're trying their best to be healthy. That part can be there without the part where you turn away from reality and you say, doesn't matter what size you are, love your body. And it's like, no, love your whole self and take care of your whole self. Don't fake reality by saying, well, it's a positive that I have a very large body. It's not a positive. It's not healthy. Take that into account. And I say the same thing to people who are, because this is something that you see a lot in the gay community. You see people who are constantly at the gym. They're starving themselves. They're you know, drinking mountains and mountains of protein shakes and then binge drinking on the weekends, right? Like they're thinking they're being healthy by running themselves ragged and, you know, getting down into like 5% body fat. And, you know, it's a curve just like anything else. You can also try this positivity thing on those folks, and it's not true for them either, right? There's, your health is a value, and for someone, you can just look and see that this is not healthy. Like, it's just,
well, right.
You can see it. And it's a fact of reality. Like, it's not something that we can pretend away.
I think an interesting question, Justin, is when people say things like, love your body, what are they actually referring to? Because they have to understand at some level that you don't actually love your body, i.e. your health, if you are consuming lots of horrible foods and carrying this amount of excess weight. Are they literally referring to the actual fat? You should love the actual fat on your bones. That's obviously a straw
interesting.
Man. But point is, there's a sort of a mind-body
interesting
dichotomy.
Direction.
Yeah,
you're right, right, right. It's 100% a mind-body dichotomy. It's an interesting direction you're taking this in that I hadn't considered. But when you say that, what I immediately think of is they're applying the flawed definition of love to themselves. And what I mean by that is people have this idea of unconditional love or selfless love. The idea that you love someone no matter what, no matter what they do, and in spite of your own values and in spite of what you think is right and wrong. And that's literally being applied to herself in this case, or anyone who's saying, oh, love your body. They're not saying love in the rational sense. They're saying love in the irrational sense of, oh, I'm going to love my body no matter what it is, no matter what condition it is.
Yeah, Justin, just to jump on that, just to jump in on that, that's a rationalization, right, that they're using. They have this weakness, and deep down they know it's a problem that they need to deal with. But this body positivity stuff is a rationalization that allows them to continue with this awful behavior of treating themselves poorly.
Right, and they're hijacking what Daniel said, which is the actual body positivity movement, right? Like, he mentioned my height. 100% correct. I mean, ideally, I would be a few inches taller, right? I would be, like, between 5'10 and 6 feet tall. I'd take 5'10 and I'd be completely happy with myself. I'm completely happy with myself now because I like who I am and I wouldn't want myself to be any different. But in an ideal world, it's true that being taller is better. It's better because women tend to be attracted to taller guys, and it's better because you can be stronger and you can survive physically in the world better if you're taller. So I recognize that. But being body positive recognizes I can't change my height, so I'm going to accept that. I'm not going to then allow myself become a short, fat guy. I'm not going to become a gummy bear from Disney's Gummy Bear cartoon show and start bouncing around here and there and everywhere. Because I'm body positive, I'm going to do what William said, which is I'm going to take care of myself the best I can, but I'm also not going to do it to the fact that it's a detriment and become obsessive, because that's the other extreme. And I think it's really wise, William, that you pointed out the other extreme of going too far with this fitness crap. It's about building a lifestyle. And as Daniel said, mind, body. If you're so obsessed with your body, you're letting your mind go to hell in the ways we're talking about. And that folds this back to something interesting that I wanted to respond to that you said, William, about this being clickbait. This whole situation is clickbait for her to rationalize the world as malevolent, because the way she handled this situation is inherently dishonest. She set the hotel up for this. She went in there knowing this would happen by the way she manipulated the situation. If you look at it, she asked for a photo shoot, but did not inform them of the attire. And then when that happened, she called them out on it. This is so clickbaity that she even baited the situation and manipulated the situation for this to happen, because she needs to have the world be malevolent.
I think in her case, though, it's more like click chum, but yeah. Goes a little beyond bait.
Yeah.
All right. Taking a turn for the more serious for a moment, The National Review had an article by David French this week that we found interesting called "The Best Explanation for Mass Shootings is the Least Comforting." So let's take a dive in here. He's writing on the day right after the Texas shooting, I believe. And he wants to dive a little bit into the question of why. Why do these mass shootings happen? And he brings up something from a Malcolm Gladwell book in 2015, trying to explain mass shootings and basically arguing that there's a threshold here similar to a slow motion riot, i.e., people will do things based on what other people around them are doing. And so when the Columbine shooting happened, in many ways, he calls it a key triggering event, and people after that, shooters after that, mimicked that event. So to read a little bit about this, quote, "Social processes are driven by our thresholds, which he defined as the number of people who need to be doing some activity before we agree to join in them. In the elegant theoretical model, riots were started by people with a threshold of zero, instigators willing to throw a rock through a window at the slightest provocation. Then comes the person who will throw a rock if someone else goes first. He has a threshold of one. Next in is the person with a threshold of two. His qualms are overcome when he sees the instigator and the instigator's accomplice. Next to him is someone with a threshold of three, so on, so on, so on. So the point here is that Columbine was sort of this instigating scenario, and it basically laid down a template for how people to follow, you know, doing these manifestos and videos and doing it very theatrically and showing how you can get on the news. And so Malcolm Gladwell is pointing out that you can have the most restrictive gun policies in the world, but you're really not going to stop this kind of behavior, even if it doesn't manifest in the school shooting context. Justin, I think you were particularly fascinated with this argument. What about it spoke to you?
It isn't as simple as that, just laying the template, because I think what is not being talked about, and this is the reason it fascinates me, is the simultaneous development of the media culture and the narrative as this happened. If you remember way back early on in the show, I don't remember what season it was in, but this was something that resonated with Midsider Katrina. I talked about the book Columbine. I don't remember who it's by. Maybe you can look that up while I'm talking right now. But the book Columbine talked about how the media spun this narrative that the two people who committed Columbine, and again, I'm not going to say their names, the two people who committed Columbine did it because they were picked on by the jocks and they were bullied. And this was their way of getting back. But if you really look at the story that happened, one of the two guys, the one who really led it and encouraged it, was a sociopath. And he was in and out of mental care, and his mother didn't take care of him that well. And that was really what drove this, is just he was enabled in this situation. And we've seen this parallel in stories since, that these are people with mental issues. But because the media push this narrative of they were bullied and they were looked down on, that, and this was their way of fighting back, that's how people latched onto it. And that's how people filed it in their head. And they said, oh, wait, this is how we can fight back. This is how we can fight back. And this goes back to what we saw in the 80s movies. And this goes back to our conversation of Harvey Weinstein. This goes back to our conversation of Joss Whedon. We've had the Hollywood narrative for how many years now tell us about the evil alpha males who bully the crap out of people, and that's why the world is as bad as it is. Now this is taken on an even new level where it's the white rich males, the white rich alpha males who are doing it. When we see 13 Reasons Why Season 2, which is all about how the rapist jock rich white male gets away with rape, only gets 3 months probation because that's the way the world works. This is the narrative we've been told. And believe it or not, Daniel, you said that the first story was less serious. That was what you implied by the transition.
Only in
to me, it's the same thing.
Only in tone. That's what I mean.
Into 100% in tone. I was doing a little bit of a straw man to make my point, but to me it's the same thing. She has the same victim mentality. She has the same, oh, it's righteous for me to do this, and it's righteous for me to interact with these people on a dishonest level because they're malevolent towards me and I'm going to prove their malevolence. Except now with the school shooting stuff, we are making it so people who have mental problems and can get a hold of weapons think that this is okay. And that's why it resonates with me, because this is the first time I've seen someone talk about the deeper issues here rather than just saying, oh, it's the guns. Oh, it's the guns. The deeper issue here of there are people who are buying into a narrative and buying into an identity. And identity is so strong in this culture right now. Buying into an identity. If you look at the Texas shooter, the picture of his trench coat, which had numerous buttons on it, I believe it had something referencing Columbine. It may have even have had something referencing Antifa. Don't hold me to that. I don't know if that's 100% true, but I heard rumors of that. So people buying into these narratives and identities, and we're seeing the way that's starting to shape actions in the world, and we're starting to pay the bill. People keep, you know, one of the cultural things right now, one of the lingo things is, show me the receipts. Show me the receipts. The receipts are there, ladies and gentlemen. Midsiders, we need to go around and show these receipts. That's what's going on.
I have no idea what that's referring to, but I'll kick it over to William to respond.
Yeah, I think what Justin's really hitting on is we know from psychological research that the coverage and the sensationalization of these individuals and their message is what enables other folks to go down this final step of a dark path. And that book on Columbine was by Dave Cullen, just so people can look that
yes,
up.
Yes, that's but it.
While you're looking that up, I want everyone to add on their Audible list a book called The Boy Crisis. This is by Dr. Warren Farrell and Dr. John Gray. And while I don't agree with everything in the book, it does lay out a fascinating, the steps, the attack on actual masculinity that leads these folks in the direction that gives them those first nudges down this path that can lead to being a mass shooter or being a criminal. And they talk about in the book how, and you can see it even in the coverage of the recent events, we take away a component of masculinity that's required for people to be well-adjusted. We separate them from fathers. We always give broken homes during divorces. Mothers always get precedent over the fathers. And we try to eliminate the differences between boys and girls by making schools better for girls. And we spend no time investing in making schools better for boys and the ways boys learn in general. And then when this happens, we turn around and we blame masculinity. So in other words, we've taken away masculinity, a healthy masculinity, and we blame masculinity at the end when we have a mass shooting by saying, oh, well, jocks bullied them, therefore toxic masculinity. And we've created this vicious circle across the board where we're having boys who become men who are not adjusted, don't understand how to deal with society. And for some of those folks, they end on this spiral where they become criminals or mass shooters or you know, just really unhappy adults. And that's a terrible thing. And until we realize, hey, masculinity is a thing and it's something that we should nurture, that there's a difference between the stereotype of a jock raping someone like on the TV show you keep bringing up, Justin, and someone who is a healthy man, a healthy individual that will stand up for what's right. There's an aspect of that that we want to nurture, and males are not disposable, right? We can't do it the way we did it in the 50s, because that's one way that they talk about in the book, but you have to nurture and respect the way that men parent, the way that women parent, and those parenting styles, why they're there, and help boys form relationships with people in the way that boys form relationships and have them get success in elementary school, middle school, and high school in a way that connects with them as an individual.
I think one of
right.
the ways...
Right, and I think the...
Yeah,
go
sorry.
Ahead.
I think one of the ways I'll quickly summarize what William is saying, perhaps, or essentially what I think about any of these kinds of articles is, let's look at the psychology of the shooters instead of what weapons they're using. It doesn't matter to me if someone kills someone with a car, a gun, a knife. I want to know what happened to that person such that they would be okay ending another person's life or multiple people's lives. What did their parents look like? What did their ideas look like? What can we do in the future to change these outcomes? And it's not going to be the weapons they use. There will always be weapons. It doesn't matter if we ban guns. We'll invent something new that kills people. And you can't look at in France. They just had three people open fire on a crowd with AK-47s, a gun that is totally banned just about everywhere in the world. So it's not about the weapons. It's about the psychology. It's about the philosophy. It's about the parenting.
Yes, and we saw the same thing in Toronto too, right? Where the guy, he took that truck.
Yeah.
What was it? He rammed it into the pedestrians.
Right.
And he identified as an incel, right? And we've talked about that on the episode with Jason Stotts, and that's sort of been in the news as well. And that's, Daniel, why I am so high on this article and why I'm beating the drum about the narrative point, because this is William speaks to William's point. The narrative point forces these kids who have these issues with, as you're saying, with psychology, with philosophy, with how they're being treated at school, with how they're being treated by their parents. And I'm not saying bullying with how they're being treated at school. I'm just saying that these kids have some sort of pain that they're dealing with. They have some sort of issues that they can't reconcile. And then they're being forced, rather than look at themselves as an individual, they're being forced to fit it into a cultural narrative. And it's saying you either belong to group A or group B. You're either a man or a woman. You're either toxic or you're non-toxic. Or even with masculinity, you're either an alpha or a beta, right? You can't have some alpha characteristics and some beta characteristics. You have to be one or the other, and you have to fit into these groups, and you can't be the individual you are. That's why I'm responding the way I am to this, because I think the narrative is an external force that we don't pay enough attention to, and we specifically do not pay enough attention to our own control over the narrative. I don't understand, and this is something I see in tutoring, this is something I see with the way adults talk to children. I don't understand why the number one thing that adults don't do with children is just ask them questions and help them determine who they are, rather than adults impressing their own values on kids. Don't be into Pokemon, or don't be into skateboarding, play soccer. Like, okay, like, why are you making that distinction? Why don't you just say, why do you like skateboarding? Yeah. Like, this is the world we live in, and I don't understand why.
Well, speaking of controlling the narrative, let's get into that a little bit. Netflix has announced a multi-year production deal with the Obamas. That would be Barack and Michelle, to be clear. The Obamas will work both in front of and behind
the
camera.
Let you be clear.
Let me be clear. In a multi-year production deal with Netflix, the Unique Pact was announced recently, and the first content from the Obamas will appear in 2019, according to a person involved with the deal. Netflix themselves did not specify a timeline, but the company's announcement of the deal said, quote, "The Obamas will produce a diverse mix of content, including the potential for scripted series, unscripted series, docuseries, documentaries, and features. Sometimes the former president and first lady will be on the camera as hosts or moderators, the source said, on a condition of anonymity. In other cases, they will stay behind the scenes as producers. Financial terms were not disclosed." But it was clear that the Obamas wanted to get into digital media when they left the administration. Jen Pasek, the White House communications director at the time, told CNN that Obama is very interested in how people consume information and the changing trends, citing online and mobile news consumption. Justin, what does this say about narratives and Netflix what kind of content is going to be coming out over the next few years?
I mean, it's going to get even worse, the kind of content. I mean, we saw with 13 Reasons Why, that's the show that William said I keep mentioning, and I'm going to keep mentioning it. And it's going to get even worse with Obama. I mean, was it us or am I just parroting people saying that Obama was the first celebrity president? Or were we the ones who said that?
Oh, we can all be right.
Really?
He was definitely the first social media president, correct?
We all know Bill Clinton was the first black president. So so I guess Obama can be the first celebrity president. But remember, Bill, you know, Boxers or Brief Bill was trying to play off that celebrity vibe as well.
Played the tenor sax on Arsenio Hall. So.
Certainly. Well, that's because the left has always known how to get control of this narrative to get popularity, and they were ahead of the curve in that way. And I mean, Obama was the head of the curve when he did social media and got elected. And this is why they are so angry at Trump, and they're trying to get the narrative back. Because Trump took what they did and was like, wait, they're doing that? I'm already a celebrity. I'm already doing all of these things. If I just pivot slightly, I can take all the momentum they've built and become president. And voila, look what he did. He became president. That's why they got so mad about that. All Obama is doing is he's trying to do what Trump already did. Trump's already a producer. Trump's already a reality star. And I am in no way defending Trump by saying this. I'm just saying that this is the next step in the escalation of the culture war. What's everyone doing all day? Everyone's binge watching Netflix. Everyone's binge watching shows on Hulu. This is where you have to go to get at people now. So that's where they're going because they've lost the White House for the time being. So they have to double down and circle back.
Did you know that I looked this up the other day because it was fascinating? Between 72 and 75%, they're not exactly sure, of all internet traffic last year, 2017, was video traffic. 72 to 75% of all traffic on the entire internet was videos being played. It's an interesting front in the culture war, and I think what you're pointing out is astute, which is that the left, particularly the left, has figured out that two areas that they need to hold on to for dear life in order to control the cultural narrative is education, which they do and have no competition in whatsoever, and the arts. I think some people in the liberty sphere are starting to wake up to that fact, but the left is just miles and miles ahead of folks, and this is a bold step by the Obamas, who are the first social justice president, certainly, and first social justice president and first lady, and they're going to take this and squeeze every ounce of value. In fact, what is the reason they give for wanting to do this? It was something strange. Oh, the Obamas said Monday they wanted to harness the power of storytelling to promote common values. We hope to cultivate and curate the talented, inspiring, creative voices who are able to promote greater empathy and understanding between peoples and help them share their stories with the entire world. Essentially, that means social justice. William, I think one of the funny tweets I saw this week was that the first Obama series announced will be House of Race Cards, which I thought was really amusing. Anyway, what do you think? What kind of content are we going to get out of the Obamas and Netflix?
Well, I think they're entering a very competitive space. I mean, let's think about it. They're going to go up against Vice News on HBO, which is just pure leftist propaganda at this point. It's been so for a while now. They'll be going against the docuseries that are let off on broadcast TV. They'll be going up against other Netflix docuseries, which all lean for the most part to the left. So they're entering a pretty competitive space. Who's going to actually watch this? That's the other thing that I wonder about. And then there's also the backlash effect to worry about. You know, presidents, once they get out of office, tend to be more hands-off, more above the fray. And if this starts coming off, I mean, we know it's propaganda, but if it starts feeling like propaganda to the general public, 2019 is getting into the election year, right? This could be a big boost for Trump. This could assure Trump's victory.
Oh, God.
Well, that's the irony, William, of what they don't realize about what they're doing here, right? This is what I was saying about these mass narratives that you're forced to fit yourself into as individuals. Unfortunately, there's still a cult of personality around Obama, right? Just like there's still a cult of personality around Bill Clinton, which got Hillary all this love for all this time and got Hillary reelected all of these times in all her various positions, was because of that cult of personality. There's still that cult of personality around Obama. And if the Democratic Party allows him to double down on this and allows people to double down on that, all that's going to do is further piss off the cult of personality that Trump has hijacked, which is only going to deepen the divide and make those people want to vote for Trump again. Trump's just going to use this as a... Can you imagine what Trump is going to tweet when these shows start coming out?
It's going to be amazing. It's going to be huge.
It's amazing in the sense of watching a car crash. I'm going to be over here and I'm going to not watch the Obama show. And then I'm going to see Trump tweet something absurd about the Obama show. And then the Obama show watchers are going to get mad at the Trump supporters. And I'm just going to be over here being like, you're all fucking idiots. Let's watch. What should they watch instead, Daniel?
What should they watch instead? Chef's Table, season four, episode two, which is great. But no, I can see the Trump tweets now. Like, what are these communists doing on my TV? Ears take up 90% of the screen. Unwatchable! Exclamation point.
It's not even that. He's going to be like, Netflix is streaming. Thank God I decide what to click on.
It's going to be weird. Speaking of a little bit weird, a guy who seldom makes the news mainstream, at least, Wynton Marsalis. Who? Jazz trumpeter. Very famous jazz trumpeter, in fact, says rap is more damaging than a statue of Robert E. Lee. I was especially fond of this story because I've had the privilege of seeing Wynton Marsalis multiple times in concert. He is one of the most talented jazz musicians living today, and partially because he refuses to integrate avant-garde or fusion or any of the modernist crap into his work. He is a jazz purist. So he's all into his genre, but he's not so much into the genre of rap. In an interview for the Washington Post, for one of their podcasts, Marsalis started talking about racism and how it has less to do with the Charlottesville attack or even Donald Trump's election and more to do with, quote, how we've lost our grip on our morality in the black community, using pornography and profanity and addressing ourselves in the lowest, most disrespectful form. He goes on to talk about just the language being used, the referring to themselves as N-words and B-words and H-words, all words I'm not going to repeat. He says, quote, I do not like rap, and it doesn't matter that I don't like it, and I recognize that, but I'm from the civil rights movement. I was called N-word, and I'm not talking about in my neighborhood, which of course that went on. I'm talking about, for me, I don't like the fact of drums going away. I don't mind the computers, they're fine. I don't know what he's talking about anymore. But they can't replace the people. There's a movement now to drag public music education down into that. Pish, it's almost comical to me. My words are not that powerful. I started saying in 1985, I don't think we should have a music talking about N-words and B-words and H-words. It had no impact. I've said it, I've repeated it, I'll still repeat it. To me, that's more damaging than a statue of Robert E. Lee. I feel that's much of a racial issue than taking Robert E. Lee's statue down. There's more N-words in that than there is in Robert E. Lee's statue. Justin, I don't know if you saw the update on this story, but Marsalis went to Facebook, and you would expect he would go there to what? Apologize? Oh, no, no, no. He went there to double down.
Nobody who lived through the civil rights movement is going to apologize for shit. Are you kidding me?
He went there to double down in a very long post talking about how he's not apologizing. If there's anything, you know, he said, clearly there is some rap that's fine, but when someone says, makes a general comment, they don't mean all of anything. So he basically took these people to task who were criticizing him and saying he stands by everything he said. New hero for you?
He is now because of his second post. Like, that was everything I was just going to say about rap is what he just said. It's not all rap. I mean, I think the thing to keep in mind with this, first of all, I want to applaud him. I want to applaud him greatly. And I do think what I said stands. The idea that, of course, someone from the civil rights movement is going to understand what it means to stand on principle and stand on virtue. And William, this is a real man. This is a real man who believes what's right and stands up for what's right. And I can appreciate that. So we need more of this in society. But I'm going to add a little bit of nuance to his overall point, because I don't want to blame the medium for the message. And it's the same thing we talk about on this show with social media. And even in the last story, I don't want to sit here and go comic book movies are terrible because Marvel has social justice Spider-Man, right? The movies aren't the problem. It's how the medium is being used. It's how rap music is being used. And that's because of the overall narrative of what he's talking about what black culture is being told, what black men are being told, right? We had this story on the show about how black men are the white men of black people. Was that the story, William?
Yes, that was it.
Yeah, he submitted
it.
That was
the story.
Yeah, you
submitted it. So we have that. So the narrative they're being told, and obviously this is where the experiential stuff comes in, right? I don't know 100% what the narrative they're being told is, because obviously I didn't grow up in their experience, right? But clearly whatever their narrative they're being told is coming out in the music. And I mean, we saw this with the way Kanye was responded to, where he was like, people should be individuals. And people should vote for who they want. And then Kanye became friends with Trump, even though they're like the same person. Like, of course, Kanye and Trump would be friends. They're the same person. And people got mad at him for that. So again, we see this narrative being applied to individuals. And that's what he's, Winston, is that his name? Winston?
Winton Marcellus.
Winton Marcellus. Well, I'm being racist because the black guy on New Girl was Winston, so I'm like super racist right now. But yeah, that's what Winton is talking about, really. He's saying, I want people to be judged for the content of their character, not the color of their skin, but everyone within this rap game, quote unquote, is taking on the same identity. I mean, here's a very concrete example for you. I'm sitting in the car last night, and the radio station that my girlfriend has on plays Drake's new song. And Drake's new song is, I said it to her, I go, he's just trying to sound like Kendrick Lamar. And Kendrick Lamar is like the last rapper that got really big and like tried to do something innovative. And then Drake, to be popular, just tries to do something like Kendrick Lamar. I know this is gibberish to Daniel right now, but I'm going to keep going with this.
You might as well be speaking Hebrew.
The point I'm making is, it has to do with the derivativeness of art and the derivativeness of culture, because we're not being told to think as individuals. Everyone just wants to be seen as the epitome of whatever identity they're forced to take on.
Yeah, that's a very astute point. William, I'm going to give you a little more to respond to, and then I'll just kick it over to you. There's just a few choice quotes here from his response that I can't go forward without reading. At one point, he calls this music pornographic products and minstrel show ghetto routines. He says they're very popular, and I can only say the people have spoken. We want to consume these products and want them for our kids. It is people's right to choose this, and it is mine to express my thoughts and perhaps dissuade some from the specific products to which I refer. And he continues.
Can I interrupt?
Yeah.
I'm laughing at the word pornography, because if anyone knows me, they know I prefer a style of rap called nerdcore, which raps about different things. So I do like rap. I just like rap that's not in the, you know, the same style and the same content, because rap is just poetry. But my girlfriend listens to more mainstream rap. And sometimes, like, when she's here, she'll put on like her Apple Music or her Tidal. Tidal is like a Jay-Z's streaming service. And some of the songs she'll put on, I'll literally say to her, oh, is this your pornography rap? Because if you hear the things they're rapping about, it literally is explicit songs about things like penetration. I'm not exaggerating. So it's funny that I derived this independently of Witten.
Yeah. And he continues, he goes into a defense of his comment about the Robert E. Lee statue, and he says, the big difference is that the Civil War was waged and definitively decided. The cultural war is ongoing, and fortunately or unfortunately, depending on your vantage point, some of the most popular aspects of hip-hop, and in parentheses, he puts in all caps, though definitely not all, in a very mocking way, is providing much-needed capital via the marketplace to both sides of that war, and as such will continue its reign as the soundtrack for American popular culture until it doesn't. At 56, I'm pretty sure I will not be alive when our country and the world of all races and persuasions no longer accepts being entertained by the pathology of Black Americans and others who choose to publicly humiliate themselves for the appetites of those who don't share the same ongoing history and challenges. Over the years, I have come to accept this, but that doesn't mean I have to like and endorse it, so I don't. William, is this guy a badass or what?
Yes, this guy is definitely a badass. He's a great musician. I'm not the largest fan of jazz by far, but he's someone I had the pleasure of seeing in concert in Baltimore many moons ago when I lived out there. He's just amazing, and he's absolutely right. This is a part of a culture that has always been uncomfortable for a lot of folks, and it is because it's fueling the narratives sort of on quote unquote both sides of the false dichotomy that is today's political culture that it exists and it's popular. I mean, you guys probably remember when we were younger, country music was sort of the biggest thing around. There was pop, there was alternative, and then country was huge. And now everything has merged into this rap culture, this lowest common denominator. It's all about penetration, as Justin said, which I think is a great way to summarize rap music. And it's very limiting. Like, you see, you see a lot of great folks when they're trying to break out, like on YouTube or on SoundCloud or stuff like that. They end up mimicking what the popular artists are doing, hoping to hit that jackpot. And then you have some other folks that are, you know, actually innovating, who develop a very, very strong but very small audience of folks that love their content. And I think that's where the future is going to go. I think you're going to see less and less of this mass music media going forward as the internet connects people who are creating real values to the people who will pay for those real values.
Yeah. And
well, it's without a doubt, that's part of the reason we've already seen sort of the stratification of the rock community. I mean, think about me. I follow so many small pop punk bands and small pop punk labels on Instagram and Twitter because that's how I get my music now. It's not mainstream. I mean, that's why Warped Tour is dying. This is the final Warped Tour, because it used to be I would go to Warped Tour to find these new bands, right? All time low. Before they got big, the first time I ever heard them was on a small internet radio station, but then I really saw them at Warped Tour. Boys Like Girls, before they blew up, I saw them on Warped Tour. That's where I would go to find the new music, but now you can find it on your own. So without a doubt, that is where things are going. The mainstream is dying, without a doubt. But the question I have in regards to this is, why is the overall content happening the way it is? Because rap has always been said to be about, and I think this is why Whitten is responding the way he is to it. It's always been said to be about them taking back the narrative, right? It was supposed to be about Black Americans taking back the narrative and owning their identity, but it's morphed. Right. And I think this is goes back to the first story we talked about today with the false version of positivity. It's morphed. It was supposed to be about, oh, hey, we're here, we're equals, and we have self-esteem, and we're going to be proud of who we are. Right. If you look back in the day towards 2 Live Crew, I think it was. Is that who it was in the 90s with the more political stuff? I believe that's who it was.
NWA as well. You can even see it in NWA, right?
Yeah, with the whole fuck the police thing, right? People not talking about nowadays, like, oh my God, police brutality is such like a new issue. No, NWA was writing about that and rapping about that in the 90s. But my point is, everything has morphed to this false version of positivity where the way you have pride in yourself is to do pornography rap. Is that the way you have pride in yourself? Look, I am not saying cover up. I'm not saying don't be a sexual person. I'm not saying don't be proud of who you are sexually. But there's a line where it becomes more about proving you can do it than actually enjoying doing it. And I think a lot of the music nowadays hasn't moved beyond this sort of rebellious teen mentality of, oh, look, mom, oh, look, dad, I can rap about these things and go mainstream with them. So that's why I'm going to do them. It's not actually about anything that they're proud of enjoying or trying to have a strong theme. And that's why I think people like, you know, a Beyonce resonates so strongly, because like her or not, and I think she's very talented and, you know, not my style, but I think she makes very good music. Like her or not, she's trying to make something good and she's trying to make actual art. And I think that's why someone like her, people latch onto versus most of the people who are just trying to prove they can do something. And I think it goes back to the positivity thing we talked about earlier.
And Winton says this in the article, and I'll begrudgingly admit that it's not that rap is some genre that is inherently bad. It's a tool, as we talked about earlier. It's a tool like anything else, and it can be used for good or bad. And I think there is good rap out there, and I think there is a lot of more bad rap out there. So it's not about the genre, really. It's about the choice of the content by the people in the genre, and that choice can change, and it can be used as a tool for good, meaning actually objectively good virtues to obtain good values. But I don't know.
First of all, I want to tell everyone out there, that's the first time Daniel's ever admitted there is good rap. Whenever I try to talk to him about rap, he's just like, all rap is terrible.
There is certainly a difference between me being able to admit that there is good rap and me saying I have enjoyed rap, which I don't think I ever have. So,
yeah, which I understand. People have different preferences. But here's the thing. I do enjoy rap, and I'm with you where I think most rap isn't good. I just don't enjoy most of it, especially most of the mainstream stuff. As I said, I can listen to someone like Kendrick Lamar and be like, okay, I like what he's doing. I like that he's doing something different, and this is good. This is entertaining. But like, there's a thing called mumble rap now, which people just mumble the whole time. And it's not like that's rap. That's rap. Like, I don't understand.
Oh, it's just, no, that's a thing. Okay.
I can't wait till Boomhauer releases his new rap album.
Yeah,
that may have already been done. I think what is it? Rule 34, that if you think of it, it's already on the internet. Somebody probably made Boomhauer rap already. I'm betting
he's going to team up with Milton from Office Space.
Wow.
You guys are going to make a subgenre of nerdcore right now. This is how nerdcore is born, by the way.
Mumble rap. That's got to be a joke.
No, Google it. Google that shit. Google it. I'm not making this shit up. I am not making this shit up. I am not.
They're going to get to the point of 20th century classical music where you have John Cage writing 4:33, which is literally 4 minutes and 33 seconds of silence. Jesus.
Why did he pick the number 4:33? I've always wondered that.
Because he's an insane person. Who cares?
All right. Well, I was going to make some other point about rap. I have lost what the point was going to be. I think we've reached a good conclusion here. Does anyone have anything else to say on this subject?
Nope.
No, but are the South Park people going to bring back Kenny for a mumble rap album?
Jesus fucking Christ. I should have never told you about mumble rap.
The people who invented mumble rap shouldn't have ever mentioned mumble rap.
I don't think people invented it.
Keep that one to yourselves. Keep that one a little closer to the vest. Or as your people would say,
oh, for the love. All right, so I think it's time to move on, and we're already talking about art, so let's just continue to do that in The Hopeful Romantic with Jam Out. No review this week because the next movie I plan on seeing and reviewing is Solo, and I haven't gotten a chance to do that lately because I've been busy. Daniel, you also have not seen Solo because you're trying to become an adult, right?
Gonna go ahead and see that what a certainly will be a disappointing piece of crap fest tomorrow. But yeah, adulting.
Okay, so tomorrow means while you're listening to the episode when this is released on Monday, he could be seeing it.
That's
so,
right. I keep forgetting yeah. there's a time difference.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
Now imagine if you did like Adam and Drew where you recorded them all in like one day for like a week. Oh, how confusing that would get.
I just can't even.
So this coming week, look for the Patreon-only specific review of... Oh my god, my cat right now. She's messing up my mojo. The Patreon-only review of Solo, that will be coming out this week. Hopefully we can find a day and time to record that.
And
for now, though, let's talk
about... We'll certainly give our thoughts about Solo on the show, though, right? But extensive, mid-side, hearty review, they're going to have to be a Patreon subscriber.
I mean, I'll give my thoughts on Solo right now. I don't need to see the movie. Like, I mean... I already said the guy, like, as Solo doesn't look convincing. Like, it just looks like Woody Harrelson playing Woody Harrelson. What's her name is hot, or the girl from Game of Thrones. And then, I don't know, I'm not convinced about Donald Glover as Lando. So the movie has a lot of legwork to do from the front with just the way the casting was. So
you'll never like this movie just because audience... you knew that Dave Franco was up for the role and didn't get it, so...
I'm not gonna judge based upon that poor, decision.
Lies, slander, lies. Yes, you are.
But with a 59% audience rating on Rotten Tomatoes, I think that none of the performances were convincing. So maybe it is all in the casting.
So it dropped to 59 because it was at 69 before, right?
Yeah, 59% audience rating, still holding on to that 71% Rotten Tomatoes score. Which is really weird because the average rating is 6.4 out of 10.
Justin.
Disney buys Rotten Tomatoes, I'm convinced. Anyway.
Justin.
Yes?
If a bee drops a beat, is it bumble rap?
Jesus, man. You are killing me right now. That is wittier than most rap that's out there.
Thank you.
But that's confusing because B can also mean bitch. So, like...
That's why it's really funny. That's why it's really funny. If an Amish guy drops a beat, is it a humble rap?
All right, do you just want to end this episode right now?
No, let's keep going. I've got important things to say about all this other stuff.
I mean, you essentially just wrote a nerdcore rap song. You realize that, right?
If Rex Burkhead drops the ball, is it a fumble rap?
Okay. Minus points because he's white. It would have been funny if you said Sonny Michel, our new running back.
I was trying to think of someone, but I was going to say Deion Lewis, but he's not on the Patriots anymore, so he's dead to me.
Yeah. No, it's good. Well, we're going to talk about a little bit more rap in a second in our final news segment. But first, we're going to talk about some trailers.
Trailer takedown. First trailer.
Won't You Be My Neighbor is the official documentary about Mr. Rogers. I'm pretty sure this trailer is the second trailer. It's pretty short. It doesn't really do anything except establish that Mr. Rogers was popular and tried to make kids be nice to people. I'm going to be a little bit of a hypocrite here. So I've been going on and on about all of these, like, fictionalized stories about these celebrities saying I'd rather watch documentaries. I'm sorry, but this documentary looks boring as shit. I appreciate the fact that they weren't like, now here's the epic story about Mr. Rogers fighting the man. PBS wouldn't put a show on, and here's how it happened. I'm glad they didn't go in that direction. But I also have zero interest in seeing this movie. There was nothing you could tell me about Mr. Rogers that would make me more interested in Mr. Rogers. Tackle. Daniel?
It does seem as if you could have covered the entirety of Mr. Rogers in the one-minute trailer. It's sort of a one-trick thing, right? But nonetheless, I'm curious, I gotta admit, how they're gonna fill probably close to 2 hours of footage with just Mr. Rogers. So just so they can pull that off, just if they can pull that off, I'm totally down. So hug.
William?
I saw very little explosions, guns, or sci-fi in this trailer, so I'm going to tackle it. Actually, I'm kind of with you, Justin. It doesn't look like, for some reason, there was no hook, right? What's the conflict that we're showing? It seemed like a decent homage, but like, what's the accomplishment, right? What was the thing we were supposed to hook onto? There was no hook in this trailer.
The hook is within you. Are you going to be his neighbor or not, William?
I don't know. I remember being a kid and watching the show, and I didn't pay attention during the parts where Mr. Rogers was on the TV. It was always the whatever the make-believe land. I always paid attention to that. I always got excited when the trolley came.
I was just going to say the same thing. I always sat down to watch it. I was like, how long is this fucking guy going to take his shoes on and off? Like, Jesus, just fucking untie your shoes. Get the trolley out here.
Maybe that makes me a bad person, but that's all I ever cared about the show. And then when it would hurry up and be over, so like, you know, 3-2-1 Contact would come on.
I think this is an interesting study. Because the first part was like him giving affirmations, right? Like, oh, I'm so glad to see you, and it's so good to see you today, and you're my friend. I wonder how many people in the current culture paid attention to the first part, and how many people paid attention to the imagination land. I bet that most people paid attention to the affirmation part, and that's why we're in the trouble we're in right now.
It could be. I don't know. I really don't remember the show. I don't remember anything that he did on the show outside of the land of make-believe or whatever.
Well, maybe that's why you gotta watch the documentary.
Take his sweater on and off and take his shoes on and off. He didn't do anything.
It always seemed so weird to me as a kid.
Look, he would like come home and he could have been like out beating prostitutes for all you know.
But that's...
And he'd come home and like take his shoes off and everything. And you're like, oh, this guy's really nice because he wears a sweater vest and talks really calmly.
But that's the thing, right? Like in our cynical culture, Mr. Rogers is like the number one guy you'd expect to be Harvey Weinstein or Jared the subway guy, right? But he was genuinely a good human being who wanted everyone to love each other. He is the American Gandhi. Never thought about that before, but Mr. Rogers is America's Gandhi. And so I think it's worth celebrating just a little bit. I'm going to watch this. I prefer
my children's shows to be hosted by a talking chair and a man who jerks off in porn theaters.
Oh, boy.
Second trailer.
The Sisters Brothers is a Western comedy starring Joaquin Phoenix and, fuck, I can't remember his name. He's in Step Brothers with Will Ferrell. John C. Reilly, that's it. I can never remember his name, especially now because he just sort of is the older version of Jonah Hill to me now. So I get really confused. There's not really... To me, anything of like note in this trailer? Does anyone like anything about the story stand out to anyone in this trailer?
The story, no. Actually, the story did not stand out to me at all. What stood out to me is the beginning of the trailer was very reliant on dialogue and these sort of flashes of gunfire. And I thought it was a beautifully done trailer until it became a very standard, boring trailer.
Yeah. Pretty much, I had much of the same impression because I think a lot of what elevated it earlier was Joaquin Phoenix. I think Joaquin Phoenix is very underrated. I think maybe because he went crazy in the middle of his career there. But I think he's a great actor, and I wish I could support him more. But there's just nothing about this trailer. I think it is based on a book, maybe. But there's just nothing that stands out. Tackle.
Tackle.
I'm assuming it's the same for you, Daniel.
Well, at first I was going to tackle it because I thought The Sisters Brothers was about a Mormon family, but I'm going to tackle it anyway because it looks boring.
Tackle.
William?
Was the title supposed to be funny? I know I have a ridiculously high bar for humor, but I didn't laugh at all. And if this is a Western comedy, which I agree with you, that's what it's supposed to be. Then I didn't get it. I mean, it did. I really liked the beginning, like Daniel said. The beginning of the trailer was interesting, but it seemed like it was super reliant on dialogue, and if the movie's going to be super reliant on dialogue, that's probably just going to be really boring. So I'm going to tackle.
Traditionally, Westerns, not very dialogue intensive. I don't know if anyone told them that.
Usually my favorite Western is Rio Bravo, and there's long sections where there's almost no dialogue.
There might be under 100 words total in Rio Bravo.
You know, Daniel, maybe if we had tried, maybe if we had tried to talk to the Indians, we wouldn't have the tragic history we have in this country.
Yes, indeed. I was going to make another rap joke, but I decided against it. I just want you to
thank
know
God.
Final trailer.
Seven Splinters in Time is a time travel movie. Woohoo! So in this movie, the main character is called to investigate a murder, and the murder victim looks exactly like him. Then he finds out there are other versions of him running around. Then at a certain point in the trailer, they mention the phrase parallel universes. So it seems like this is a time travel story. Then all of a sudden it becomes a parallel universe story. And then all of a sudden I orgasmed all over my phone while watching the trailer. This to me looks like an early Christopher Nolan film with the way it's shot. A lot of the staging is very similar to Following, except there's like almost a Snyder-esque filter on it to make it look like, ooh, it's futuristic. So I am in with this. This looks like it could be really, really good. Hug. Daniel?
Unforgivably terrible acting. Dialogue that seems like it was written by... it could be written by Chris Nolan if he was hit in the head with a vase and given brain damage, I suppose.
Would you say it's mumble, Christopher Nolan?
Yes. If anything, it's jumbled, Christopher Nolan. Yes. Thank you. Christopher Nolan, when he does it, it's called jumble rap. Yeah. So overall, unimpressive, and I'll be watching my Mr. Rogers documentary instead. Tackle.
William, it's sci-fi.
Oh, man. But I agree with so many of Daniel's criticisms. I mean, the dialogue was and acting didn't look too good in the trailer. That being said, it does seem to have an interesting story to tell. So in my continued support of good sci-fi, I will give it a tentative hug.
Hug.
Yes, I just want to be clear that I don't need the dialogue to be good. If there's a dude who finds a murdered version of himself and then has to deal with the fact that there's like seven parallel universes and there are different versions of him, I don't need there to be good dialogue. I just need to see the guy's head be fucked and be like, what is going on with all these different versions of myself? Mamma mia.
Here we go again.
Man, we just lost our one Italian listener.
I am Italian. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on and let's continue with our discussion of rap and rap celebrities in our new segment, Good Kanye, Bad Kanye.
It's the old Kanye, straight from the gold Kanye. Chop up the soul Kanye, set on his goals Kanye. I hate the new Kanye, the bad mood Kanye, the always rude Kanye, spazzing the
news segment
Kanye.
Is about a celebrity that was popular or did something noteworthy in the last week, or at least there's a lot of conversation about what he or she did. We will then look into what that celebrity did, or public figure. I don't know what the real difference is anymore when our president is a celebrity. So we will then look into what that celebrity or public figure did, said, and tweeted over the past week. We will look at five or so things. And we will look at each of those items and we'll say, well, that is that person being a good Kanye or is that person being a bad Kanye? This is, of course, born from something we've observed over the past month or so. And that's that Kanye West is sort of bipolar and that he says some really good things and he says some really, really terrible things. And of course, for the first ever edition of Good Kanye, Bad Kanye, we are going to look at the only celebrity we could, Kanye West. And that carries forward from our discussion of rap. So let's look at what Kanye West did this week and say whether he was being a good Kanye or a bad Kanye. Number one, Kanye West paid $85,000 to use the photo of Whitney Houston's drug-strewn bathroom on Pusha T's new album cover. Daniel, is this good Kanye or bad Kanye?
I'm torn because the marketer in me wants to jump up and down and scream, good Kanye, because wow, what a bold move that people are going to talk about endlessly. He's going to get just an incredible amount of free media attention for this very bold move. But then there's the moral part of me, which thinks you shouldn't exploit drug addicted dead people for gain. So unfortunately, despite my better judgment, I think it's bad Kanye.
Well, do you want to make it a push? Do we want to call that one a push for you?
No, I mean, maybe, but morality wins out, unfortunately.
William, good Kanye, bad Kanye?
This is definitely bad Kanye. This is exactly the kind of pornography rap that Wynton Marsalis was talking about in the last article.
It's a very bad Kanye. I'm
see, it writes itself, this segment.
Yeah.
I'm going to agree, but I'm going to point out it's bad Kanye for another reason. $85,000? The good Kanye is whoever got $85,000 out of you for that photo.
True. Entrepreneur.
Now we're going to move into some tweets here. Number two, Daytona is the first project out of Wyoming. I'm really proud of what we put together. We spent a year and a half digging for samples and writing. I really appreciate the overwhelming positive response that we've been receiving. So for a little more context, Wyoming is apparently where Kanye West has decided to go now whenever he wants to record or produce an album.
Wait, the
state?
He
has set up a studio in Wyoming. Yes.
Oh. I thought it was like, he thought he named like his multi-million dollar mansion Wyoming or something.
No, I did too. I did research to make sure he was actually going to Wyoming because I think that changes the context here. So we'll go with William first. William, is this tweet good Kanye or bad Kanye?
I think it's good Kanye. He's pointing out that his hard work and the work of his team has paid off in making a quality product. So I think it's good Kanye.
Daniel, good Kanye, bad Kanye?
I think it's good Kanye because he's bringing economic stimulus to the otherwise barren state of Wyoming, making it relevant other than being the square bit in the middle of the country that holds it together. And when he goes to Wyoming, he increases the percent of African American population by upwards of 6,000%. So
Alaska, there are no black people in Alaska.
So I think he's good Kanye. He could run for senator in Wyoming. That'd be fun.
I agree for the same reason that it is good Kanye. I appreciate the fact that he is doing something Tom Brady-esque. And what I mean is going to the region of the country no one goes to for vacation and to create art, because he knows it makes no sense in today's day and age to record in Los Angeles or New York City. It's just not cost effective. And there's no reason to with the way technology works. So I think it's good Kanye.
That's a good Kanye. He's a very good Kanye. We need, is it Dan Hackney? We need Midsider Dan. Some pejorative good Kanye, bad Kanye sound effects.
Yeah, do different reads with it, Midsider Dan. I was going to ask you off the show if this went well, but it's going well and we've already decided. So, all right, number three. Sometimes we all need hugs. Daniel, good Kanye, bad Kanye?
Whoa there, Kanye. We're not on those kind of terms. You need to keep your hands off. Bad Kanye.
William?
I think it's good Kanye. I'm a hugger. And it's...
careful.
It's... I know. I may be accused of sexually harassing people, especially when we're out at the bar and we've had a few Boulevardiers.
Yeah, hugger, please.
I think this is actually a subtweet at Kim Kardashian. I think Kanye is just feeling lonely and not getting the attention he needs. So I'm going to say this is bad Kanye because you shouldn't tweet it, Kanye. You should say it.
That's right. Bad Kanye.
Number four. Look at your phone as a tool, not an obligation. Would you walk around with a hammer in your pocket? You would pick up a hammer when you needed it. You would never be addicted or obligated to it. Use your phone like a hammer. Only pick it up when you need it. William, good Kanye, bad Kanye.
Well, I always walk around with a hammer in my pocket. I call it the hammer, so, but at least, no.
Zing. What are you, Captain Hammer? The hammer is my...
Yeah, yeah. So I think this is good, Kanye. You should use technology as a tool, and people get addicted to it. They use it to escape reality or to assuage their feeling of not being connected. You know, talk to people.
What?
Be present with the people you're around.
Get off of Instagram.
But get onto Discord.
To his girlfriend. Is it my turn?
Yes.
Oh. Hammer in your pocket sounds like a communist ska band. Thank you.
Or an Atlantis Morissette song.
Well, that was, yeah. Yeah, of course. So I think this is good, Kanye. I can get behind this message. You need not think of your phone as something you must attend to, but as something that must attend to you when it's needed. I turn off a lot of notifications on things for that reason, which is like, I'll get to you when I get to you, phone. I don't need you to tell me all the time that you need my attention. I will pick you up when it is time. So,
yo, can I say that too, that my girlfriend gets so many notifications, not only like texts and everything, but like Poshmark will give notifications, or she gets all of the news notifications. And I'm like, oh my God, it's way too many notifications. My head would explode.
Yeah, I turn off notifications for just about everything other than text, phone, and email. That's basically it. And I'm this close to turning it off for email. So you better watch.
I know you have the notifications off for me because you never reply.
Well, I know I've missed conversations with you guys because I don't have Facebook Messenger because I don't like the notifications for Facebook or Facebook Messenger at all. So I don't even have the apps in my phone anymore for either one of those.
You know,
so,
this is why William's trying to set up Discord. This is the real
exactly.
reason.
Exactly. Discord, I can completely control the notifications.
It's very smart.
It took me like 48 hours to figure out how to do notifications for Discord.
On purpose. It's really smart, William, because Facebook Messenger is the absolute friggin' worst about notifications. Now I will get notifications from Facebook, the company, telling me things like, hey, take a look at these ads you ran 2 years ago. You could run similar ads on your pages now. Or 300 and whatever people haven't heard from the Midside page in a while. Why not send a message? It's like, really, Facebook? I don't want to talk to you.
Yeah, we get that one for Welcome to Midside all the time. Whenever I make a post, like within 8 hours, it'll be like, page admins boosted posts similar to this one. And I want to reply and be like, stop trying to take my money for no reason and actually show my audience my posts.
That's right. Facebook is the modern day beggar on the street, right? Got a quarter? You can put a quarter. Want to give me a quarter? I'll take a dollar. They're the worst.
They're worse than a beggar, though. They're like a beggar who stands in the way of you in the street and goes, oh, if you give me a dollar, you can keep walking down the street. You mean the thing I was going to do anyway?
Sorry, to me, that's just a beggar, since that is basically what happens in DC. So.
All right, so I am going to make this a push for myself because I appreciate the metaphor and I agree with everything you two are saying, except for the fact that unless you are like a contractor, you're never going to actually carry a hammer around. So I don't think he executed the metaphor as well as he could have. Although I'm sure the argument is that's why he picked a hammer, because it's absurd, right?
Yeah.
So this is a push for me. Number five, and I hope you all have been keeping track of your scores overall, because we're going to at the end say good Kanye or bad Kanye overall. Number five, and I actually put two tweets together because he did one of those where now that we have like 280 characters, that's still not enough. So people need to do multiple fucking tweets still. So it says the Century of Self. Then it gives a link to a YouTube documentary and it says it's 4 hours long. Yes, Kanye, so you need two tweets in 4 hours. But you'll get the gist in the first 20 minutes. Basically, Sigmund Freud's nephew, Edward Bernays, capitalized off his uncle's philosophies and created modern-day consumerism. Now this is the next tweet. Before Edward Bernays, Americans purchased things based off needs. There was a time in the 20s when women didn't smoke in public, so Edward Bernays masterminded a campaign to make it culturally acceptable so that companies could sell more cigarettes. It's that kind of vibe. And I believe this is Daniel. You go first this time.
Tough one. Edward Bernays, I think this is the same person. I didn't know his first name was Edward, so maybe it is a different person, but is sort of credited with coming up with the modern day kind of icon marketing, where it's a product can be more than a product. It can be a symbol of the kind of person you want to be. I didn't know.
I thought that was Don Draper who did that.
In many ways, Don Draper was, I'm sure, based on Bernays. I didn't know he was a nephew of Sigmund Freud. That makes me think a lot less of him. So overall, happy that Bernays is being talked about as a marketer. It's interesting, but the attack on quote-unquote consumerism, this is kind of a push for me. Meh, Kanye.
Is it, that'll be our middle ground is meh, Kanye. Okay, good. William?
I think this is bad, Kanye. There's a sense in which there is something true about people being manipulated by advertising and marketing, but I think it's not something I worry about. And maybe that's because I don't consume media in that way. Like, I don't think I even... Like, I get annoyed that when I watch The Expanse on Hulu, I have Hulu Premium, and I can't fast forward through the commercials. And I got so annoyed that I just bought the season on Apple TV because I don't want to deal with the commercials. I've already paid for the content, and I just avoid it. So I think this is something interesting, but I'm not sure I would like the slant. So I'm going to call it bad, Kanye.
I am going to call it bad, Kanye, for similar reasons. One, the documentary that's being linked to is called The Century of Self. So the idea of wanting things for yourself is bad. So those are the two reasons. It continues with this misnomer about what the self actually is. And it continues to demonize this idea of wanting things makes you a bad person. So for me, this is bad, Kanye. So gentlemen, those are the end of our five things. Tally up what you did. Do you remember, Daniel, what is the overall score that you have? Good Kanye, bad Kanye, meh Kanye.
Well, this week is two good Kanye, two bad Kanye, one meh Kanye. So I think that very, necessitates a meh Kanye.
Very, very consistent. William, what did you have?
I had three good Kanyes and two bad Kanyes.
Justin.
Let's see what I had here. So we had, I have to host at the same time, so I have to add these up as I go.
Welcome to my woker joke life.
First one I had bad. Second one I had good. Third one I had bad. Fourth I had meh. So it's one good, one bad, one meh. And then I had a bad. So I think that's two.
That's one, three one. Bad, one good, one meh. So bad.
So it's bad Kanye. So overall, yeah, this week Kanye. Was bad Kanye.
For you.
I'm surprised. I thought we were going to come out good Kanye this week.
Well, no. Hold
so
on. Final... William had good Kanye
yeah,
this week.
Yeah, I had good. Yeah, I had
oh,
good.
So
Daniel
we have
had
meh,
meh
Kanye.
So I had meh. We have meh Kanye.
So by a score of 1-1-1, Daniel had meh Kanye. William had good Kanye. I had bad Kanye, which is surprising because I would have thought I had the good Kanye. By a score of 1-1-1, we have meh Kanye. But I think that's pretty consistent. I think overall Kanye is some good, some bad. And yeah. I actually think he's the good of Kanye isn't talked about enough. So meh Kanye. Look for this segment in the future. And if you have celebrities that you want to know if over the past week they've been a good Kanye or a bad Kanye, for instance, when Roseanne re-premiered, that would have been a good week to do Roseanne Barr. If you know any celebrities you want to know for the past week, good Kanye or bad Kanye, let us know and we'll talk about them and we will give our official rating, which may probably end up with meh Kanye anyway. That may be more common than I realized, but all right, gentlemen, what did we learn this trip? Daniel?
I learned that gymnasts do tumble wrap.
God damn it!
Thank you.
William?
I learned that all Daniel needed was a brand new house to up his dad joke game to fully unlocked. It's now fully unlocked.
Dad, I am prepared. That baby could drop anytime.
And I can't wait to swim in his pool.
Come on over. Bring some beer. Justin, hey, you can bring Daniel, some root beer.
You know what kind of wrap Cookie Monster does?
Crumble wrap.
Yeah!
I thought about it too. Not Cookie Monster, but I thought about something to do with cookies. Yeah.
But I beat you because I did the Cookie Monster.
Justin, what did you learn this week?
That I'm a better rapper than you are. No, I learned that actually, you know what? I can come up with pretty good segment ideas. I am very happy with the good Kanye, bad Kanye segment. I think that's a good one.
I think it's because his name. He has a good name to sort of use as a rating system.
Yeah.
I gave that movie 4.5 Kanyes. Yeah. Anyway, I hope you learned something this week, including various kinds of rap that you might engage in. You didn't even know it based on who you are. You have all sorts of genres of rap open to you. So democratize the rap for the people.
Hey, Daniel.
Yeah.
You know what the headmaster of Hogwarts does for rap?
Dumble rap?
Dumble door rap.
Yeah, I was going to do tumbleweed rap during the Western section, but that I saved it for the gymnasts. So once we start getting into multiple syllables and slant rhyming, I think we're out of rap. So yeah. That's not true rap, damn it. Anyway, Dr. Seuss forever.
Hey, you know what it is when I do the intro to this show? Stumble rap.
Well, I was going to say horrible, but yeah. Thanks for listening to this very strange episode of Welcome to the Midside. If you want to go back and listen to other episodes, you can go to themidside.com/podcast and listen to all the previous episodes there, including the Snyder series and Nolan Notes and other stuff that's there. You can also go to themidside.com/store while you're there and purchase one of our amazing t-shirts, including the classic logo. So classic, or False Dichotomy Bro, or Hail Snydra shirts. Helping.
I came up with a couple other t-shirt ideas I need to work on. I don't know why I said ideas, but ideas I need to work on. It's these fucking braces.
The rain in Spain falls mainly on the plane.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think it would be awesome to do a mock band t-shirt called The Trigger Warnings, because that sounds like a great band name. And also, I want to do like a sports t-shirt called like the Midside Microaggressors, because that's like our official team.
I like it. I like it. On terms of the trigger thing, yeah. But what about Inclusion Rider and his trusty horse Triggered?
Oh, that could be a good that could be a good t-shirt too. I think we should write a movie for that though.
I think at least a skit. We at least need a skit where Inclusion Rider rides into town to dole out social justice. I think that'd be hilarious. Anyway, let's kickstart that. Okay, so you can also go to iTunes or Google Play and listen to all the previous episodes and subscribe and get them delivered to you the moment they're published by the one and only Justin M. Lesneski. You can leave a 5-star rating while you're there. 5 stars. That's the rating we want, even if you hated the show and think we're racist bigots. 5 stars. Tell us that in the comment.
That hey, we us. Are not racist. We call Kanye meh Kanye. We do not hate or love black people. We just think they're meh, okay?
We're indifferent. We'd put them all in purgatory if we were God. Yeah, so good Kanye, bad Kanye, new segment. Tell us what you thought of that on social medias at The Midside everywhere. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, Vero, all the places Zack Snyder can be found. You can go to patreon.com/themidside. That's where you can choose to support us financially. Throw us a couple bucks every time we produce a piece of content. You heard me right. It's not just monthly or weekly or whatever. It's when we produce content. So you actually, it's a trade. We believe in trading here, trader principle. We give you content. You give us money. It helps keep the lights on. We release Patreon-exclusive content there, including, most recently, our first episode ever of Welcome to the Midside, going deep into the archives. Don't even want to know what I sounded like on that episode. But that's fun. We're going to be releasing the in-depth review of Solo, A Star Wars Story, to Patreon listeners.
Wait. We're not doing an in-depth review of Red Solo Cups?
No, not this time. Especially if there are going to be two girls involved. We don't want to.
Oh.
So, thanks to our Patreon subscribers, we love you. But if you can't be a Patreon subscriber, we understand. No problem. This show will always be free. Forever and always. Don't hold me to that contractually. I have no idea what 40 years from now the show is going to be like. So, but what you can do for us, instead of giving us money, is tell someone about this show. Now, in previous weeks, I have limited this to telling a friend, at least in my initial pitch. This week, I'm just saying, tell someone. I honestly don't care who you tell. It could be a complete stranger. Just walk up to someone on the street and say, by the way, are you listening to Welcome to the Midside? And then walk away and see the look of horror on their face.
I actually think you should tell an enemy. Tell an enemy this week.
That's good. Enemies are good. Tell someone who just is out to get you about the show, and maybe you'll build a bridge of friendship across that bridge of hostility. Or across the river
or
of hostility.
Or maybe appropriately this week, tell someone you're meh about.
There you go. Tell Kanye West about the show. Maybe he'll retweet it. Tell him we talked about him. He's, you know, vain enough to tune in. it'd be funny if he tweets it and then Trump retweets it. It'd be awesome.
I think if he tweeted it and Trump retweeted it, I would just end the show. I would retire.
Just retire immediately on the spot. That's right. After we rake in all that internet money. That's right. So thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating us. And until next time, stay cool, kids.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Emelzeski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day. Stay back, be vexed, just be a total back. Find what matters most to you. Stay the course and fight. I think you're feeling it. Ow!
Oh my God, River! Did you hear her? I'm cutting all this out, by the way. Come on, River. Come here.
It's good pod, totally.
Is it?
No, cut it out. Jesus.